I must apologise for bringing you in on an evening like this when there's probably a thousand better things to be done in what appears to be a summer, but I could be wrong. I haven't got too confident of it yet. Emergency evacuation procedures, I think looking around, everybody here is a regular in this building, and therefore we all know where they what those are. Apologies for absence. Well,
three apologies, Chair. Councillor Sanderson, Councillor Frank and Councillor Cousins.
Right. Is that everybody then? So we've got 1, 2, 3. Yes, so there's Di Keel missing and Linda.
Di's on holiday, apparently.
Di is on holiday, yes. Yes, and Di did tell me last week that she was on holiday, so can we add that in as a taken apologies? I haven't heard from Linda. Has anybody heard from Linda? No? I will take my usual minutes of the meeting on the 14th of June on page 3. Everybody happy with those? Anybody want to make any comments in their direction? Although we don't have matters arising, there is one matter arising, but it is in fact item 9 on the agenda, so that's covered, something we didn't do at that last meeting. So, are we agreed if I move the minutes? Are they seconded? Thank you, Jim. Urgent business. I will take my usual relaxed approach on urgent business as we go through. If something arrives that needs to be discussed tonight, rather than leave it until the next meeting, we'll do it tonight. But I have, as it stands now, no items of urgent business. Declarations of interest. Have we any declarations of interest? No? None? This is the usual way. We usually get through the first 5 items of the agenda in about 30 seconds flat and then slow down from there on. Internal audit and counter fraud report on page 7. And this is Stuart's report, isn't it?
Thank you, Chair. Let me just introduce Max Thomas, who's the Head of Internal Audit for Veritas, who will be introducing the report, and I'll probably answer any questions in terms of any of the detail in the content of the report, subject to any that members may want to raise. So Max Thomas will introduce the report.
I'm more than happy between you and Max. You can decide exactly where you're going with it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Max.
Thank you, Chair. This is my annual report where I provide you with details of the internal audit work we've undertaken during the year, as well as giving you an opinion, an overall opinion on the framework of governance, risk management and control operating within the council. The details of the actual audits undertaken and reports issued are set out in Appendix 1 and in Appendix 2. We provide more details about audit reports that have been finalised since the last committee meeting. Before I turn to the actual opinion itself, I should add that we've had very good engagement from management within the council. There have been no barriers placed or any areas of work that we've been unable to complete. Where we have identified issues, those have been accepted by management, and where we've recommended improvements in control, management have taken or agreed appropriate action plans, and those action plans we can see that good progress is being made to implement those actions. You also need to be satisfied that you can place reliance on the opinion that I'm providing. So what we have in place is a series of quality assurance processes. Those processes ensure that we are conforming to the public sector internal audit standards. And what we do is we summarise the processes and outcomes in a document called the Quality Assurance and Improvement Programme, and that's included in Appendix 4. In terms of the actual overall opinion, I'm providing a reasonable assurance on the Council's framework. No qualifications to that opinion, and we've not placed any reliance on any other assurance providers in reaching that opinion. I am required to let you know of any significant control weaknesses which we consider should be considered for inclusion in the Council's annual governance statement. So in paragraph 6.3 of the covering report, I've picked out a couple of areas there. Very happy to take any questions on the report or the work that we've undertaken.
Thank you. Any questions from anybody? Last year we were questioned by the small bucketful. None this year. I hope that's a good indication how much things have improved over the last year, or again it may be the summer evening, I'm not sure which. Right. Sorry.
The only place where I've seen we have limited assurance Sundry Desk on page 15, is it?
Have you got your microphone, or can you bring it down a little bit?
The only place where I can see any, where we, there is any concern at all seems to be the limited assurance on Sundry Debt. Is that where would you say that we stand in relation to other councils that you deal with on that?
On the sundry debtors, that was, I think, one of two limited assurance reports. I think the other one we've reported is later on with the risk management. The problem with the sundry debtor side of things, I'll just refresh in terms of what specifically I've summarised in the report, is really things were not in place and happening as they should be. So policy and procedure was there, or expectations of review were there, but things weren't really happening. And in one sense, it could have been a lot worse because you haven't got a significant level of serious debt that's accrued as a result of certain procedures not being applied. But I think with the areas of improvement, we highlighted that just certain things were not being done. And to be fair to Peter, when we started planning this work, he had thoughts in that area, and that's why we targeted the work, which could be quite wide on sundry debtors, to focus on aspects of the debt recovery process and in part capacity, things to do with the ability of legal to be able to do certain things that were in policy were aware of by management, I think. In terms of future developments was something that they were starting to consider, but the consequences of what we saw wasn't what we usually find on sundry debtors. People tend to be a lot more on top of it, but again, ultimately the consequence of things not working could have been a lot worse because there wasn't significant levels of sundry debt that had been missed while people weren't applying the procedures.
I'm not quite sure where the completion of this part of the report happened, but do you see that that's been addressed already, or is it still in process?
The actual report itself was finalised relatively recently, so management provided us with an action plan which we thought was appropriate. We'll actually follow that up to make sure that the agreed actions have actually taken place. Obviously, we can't comment on progress yet until we've done that piece of work.
Just to kind of add a little bit with what we do throughout the year is with the next progress report, which I think will be October, if not early November time, I'll provide the usual summary on the detail of the follow-ups, because there'll be a lot that I would envisage would have first half of the year deadline, so we could bring you a more detailed analysis, so you'll be able to see where the kind of specific progress or otherwise has been on individual audits, including this one.
Will.
If I can just pick up on that, there's obviously a significant difference between the two things that you're highlighting there. One is about the fact there isn't a process, and the other one is about the fact there is a process, but it's not being done properly. Personally, I would be far more worried about the second case than the first case. Everybody misses processes, and sometimes things change and we have to put new things in. But when we've got processes in place that aren't being actually followed up on, it does, or done appropriately, it does worry me. Is that the area that's getting the focus now of attention in terms of correction?
I suppose I haven't got an up-to-date position since the audit was completed, is the honest answer. But it was one of the audits, whilst there was a lot of findings, it was very quick to agree. Some audits, you see payroll actually only had the one finding and we've yet to finalise it, and there's a little bit of a backstory linked to the change in the payroll provision and the HR provision with county. But with this one, it was relatively straightforward to have that kind of meeting of minds, which also set out particular timescales. So without just going back to the detail of the report and seeing what deadlines Peter or it would be others now would have lined up, I wouldn't know what we would have expected to have done by now. But I think, say in part, the legal situation was a capacity thing, which wasn't a, oh no, you've told us something we don't know. It's something we didn't realise it was that bad, but we've got this, and this is what hopefully we'll resolve in 18-19. So it was one of those where almost everything we looked at, we found something, but at the end you thought, well, that could have been a hell of a lot worse, but it's still, if you look at what we set out to achieve in terms of the three bullets in the areas we reviewed, you were going, no, no, no. But again, that goes back a little to what Max said at the beginning, is audit could have found a yes, yes, yes if we were being, directed to the areas which officers knew was working. But you wouldn't get the value of kind of independent review or a little bit of more capacity to look at things in an independent way. And that's what we find at Rydell and our other clients, to be fair, kind of that open engagement to direct us in the areas where our resource can kind of add the most improvement, or at least give independent assurance that what they think is working is working. So.
Well, I've got two comments to make. One is that I've spent the last 3 years once at the back there watching as a fellow councillor, and the last 2 years in this position waiting to congratulate Pete Johnson on getting the City of York payroll signed off. And so as to avoid me telling him what a good job he'd done, getting to that point, A, he has moved on to pastures new, and B, we're changing our payroll provider. But apart from that, throw a thank you out to Pete in the past. Well, we have woken up or come round to some extent because we've had questions on it. Is there anybody else got any more to add before I move the recommendations? No? Right. Can I move the recommendations on page 7? That we note the results of the audit and counter-fraud work undertaken in 2017-18, and B, accept the opinion of the Head of Internal Audit on the adequacy and the effectiveness of the authority's internal control environment. Now, that recommendation there is in actual fact covering, I think, the next item of the agenda is the counter-fraud update. So, can you clarify that, please, mate?
Yes, the recommendation is that this report, which you've just considered, looked at counter-fraud work undertaken last year, so it's part of the
last year's
report, so it's not this
counter-report fraud here. Yep.
Yep.
So I'll move those recommendations to the seconded. Thanks, Ed. Those in favour? please vote is the correct way of saying it. That, I think, is passed unanimously. Yes, thank you. Right, we now come on to the counter fraud report.
Thank you, Chair. This report is part of our support to the Council in terms of helping it ensure appropriate counter fraud arrangements are in place. What we do is we keep the policy framework under review. We also identify any new or emerging fraud risks, and if necessary, we'll reprioritise our counter fraud work. So this report has three annexes. The first annex is really just for information. It's the copy of the SIPFA report. This is based on a survey that they undertake across the country, looking to identify fraud issues, and we use this to help inform our programme of work. We also have reviewed the policy framework, and there are no changes considered necessary to the policy framework. But we are presenting an updated action plan. So it's just identifying some of the areas that we want to focus on this year in terms of our counter fraud work. And then finally, should be a private matter. So I don't know if you want to go into private session on the...
Well, I was going to say when you finished, A, there is no member of the public here, and B, we can go into private session if anybody wants to go into discussion or questions on those pink sheets. So whichever you think we can go into exempt, if you think we should. If people don't want to go into the pink sheets, there's no point in us going into exempt. Or if you, do you want to say something on the pink sheets as such that might be better into exempt, because if you do, then we can go into exempt.
Not really. Hopefully the sheets are fairly self-explanatory.
That is
so
what
I'm not intending to...
In which case, we won't go into exempt unless somebody wants to raise a question on them or go into them, and then we will.
Okay, so just to summarise then, we've updated the action plan, produced a new risk assessment. The results of that work help us to prioritise the counter fraud work that we're doing for the council. Very happy to take any questions on any part of the report.
Any questions, anybody? Go on, Will.
Yeah,
yes, that's it. Just warm it up slowly. It'll get going
just
slowly.
Don't get me started.
Get the job started.
Just, are we a typical council in this area? I mean, if you look at other clients and people you work with, if I just look at some, there seems to be a reasonable match in terms of the report, SIPFA, whatever, and in terms of where things are and what happens in Rydale. Is that a sort of fair... We haven't got any things in Rydale that you look at and think, that's unusually high, or you look at and think, why is that so blinking low, is really the question I'm asking.
No, I think compared with our other council clients in this region, Rydale is really no different.
Right.
What we do see is some differences to the national picture. So SIPFA identify some areas of fraud where we don't really experience fraud in those areas. So examples are around procurement fraud, mm-hmm. Insurance fraud. Those are areas that we don't really see very much happening. Housing fraud is also a much bigger issue in the big cities.
Sure. Okay, thank you.
No questions? No, I think that appears to be the end of that. Let's see, what are the recommendations? Recommendations to approve the updated Counter Fraud and Corruption Strategy Action Plan and we comment on and note the analysis of current fraud risks faced by the Council. I'll move that. Is it seconded? Thank you, Will. Please vote. And that's unanimous as well. Thank you. Can we now move on to item 8, the statement of accounts? And the usual comment here is that if the internal auditors have better things they would prefer to do, then I'm entirely relaxed about them deciding to go. And if, on the other hand, they'd wish to spend the evening here enjoying overview and scrutiny, they are more than welcome. Who's introducing the statement of accounts? John?
Thank you, Chair. We have the statement of accounts for the final position for the year for 17-18. It's really just an opportunity for the committee to review and then raise any questions or queries they might have on the accounts. I'm happy to take any questions.
I am coming to the conclusion it is the weather, you know.
No, I think there is a surplus for the 17-18. Do you have the figure?
It's 2 million.
2 million. Yeah. And, yeah, and those are reflected in these accounts.
Would you have expected that this might have been identified prior to the end of the accounting period?
I think it was higher than anticipated. I think we were expecting a surplus position on the budget position.
I understand that the expected surplus was going to be around 1.4 million, so this is higher than we expected the outturn to be.
Right. Okay.
I think I might be correct in that it isn't just an overspend, an underspend. There was an extra income came in over and above what was expected. And I think that figure, from memory, was something like about 0.8 of a million, was it, Mandy? Something like that?
I know there were some higher than expected income areas in areas such as planning, but I don't know the exact figure for that extra income until some work's been done on identifying the areas that made up the 2 million underspend.
Yeah. I think it was 2 point low something million underspend, but only 1 point something million was actual underspend, and point something less than a million was extra income. That was my broad brushstroke understanding of it. And those numbers are too vague for anybody to quote on, but it wasn't just not spending what was budgeted. It was more money coming in as well as under budgeting. And as Mandy's nodding, I must be roughly right.
No, it was a combination of both.
Yeah.
Underspend and overachievement of income, but I haven't got the breakdown areas are.
Well,
yeah, just on the underspend, I mean, I appreciate, you know, this set of figures are this set of figures, and there's a line drawn. But areas where we have underspent, is that simply a timing issue, or is it underspend that has gone away forever?
We're not entirely clear at the moment. I think we need to do some more work in terms of the underspend position to identify exactly what the reasons were for the underspend. So we've identified certain areas, but I think there is further work to do.
Now, the next thing that we've got on the agenda is the ISA 260 document to follow. Who's going to take us through that?
I am, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. And good evening.
Good evening. So, firstly, apologies, this document only came through this morning, but it's one of the impacts of faster close, in the sense of normally in the past we've had 3 months to undertake the audit. We get 2 months now. Deadline is Tuesday, the 31st. I'll reflect in that officers do have 1 month less to prepare the accounts as well. So you'll note a couple of areas in red, because work is ongoing in a couple of areas. Those areas, before I do start that work is ongoing, is just around some work around the PPE balances, that's property, plant and equipment, pensions, and some outstanding testing of journals. In terms of what this report does, is subject to that outstanding work, it draws the conclusions of the audit. Now, you'll recall from the presentation of the audit plan, I have two jobs. In terms of the first job is to issue an opinion on the financial statements, on those financial statements that were just presented a moment ago, whether they give a true and fair view of the financial position and performance of the council. And secondly, to issue a conclusion on your use of resources, referred to as the value for money conclusion. So I'm going to pick up the audit just with a little bit around process. So the authority has had 1 month less to prepare the accounts. I'm pleased to report we've got a good set of financial statements by the required date, by the end of May. That's not true of all of my clients. So some clients missed that deadline, some clients produced accounts which you'd barely call accounts. So first, you know, really positive performance in terms of a good set of accounts was produced. In terms of quality of supporting working papers, we don't just get the accounts and then do the audit work. There's working papers that support that officers prepare. So again, generally pleased with the quality and the timeliness of those. And again, the responses, Mandy will be first one to say we raise lots of questions and queries, which is part of our job around challenging assumptions, judgments in there. And again, you know, generally the quality and timeliness has been positive. And I think it's important to reflect on that in the context of the changes that you have faced as a local authority in terms of your capacity changes. You know, there's a lot less of you now in terms of putting these accounts together. And these accounts have to be put together quicker, and they never get simpler. The guidance that comes around financial reporting standards that's then adopted by CIPFA's code always seems to increase the complexity of the financial statements. So I think that's an important just reflection and stand back. And you'll note in the appendices I have raised a recommendation just around capacity. In terms of as an organisation, I'll return to that later. In terms of the nuts and the bolts of the audit, over on page 5 of my document, I've set out 2 specific risks. Those are actually risks that all audits face. That's what the accounting auditing standards say. These are risks that all audits have. Firstly, management override of controls. Don't want to alarm you. That doesn't mean we think management's overriding controls, but it's to undertake some procedures to ensure we're comfortable there's been no override of controls. So one way management may override a control is doing journals. That's the easiest way to impact on the financial statements. So we do some heightened procedures around journals, looking at key risk factors. Also, some of the judgments in there. Sometimes, and when I get to talk about some of the other risks, very small changes in assumptions and estimates can have massive swings on your financial statements. So it's about looking at those key judgments and estimates to make sure they're reasonable, so we can provide that assurance. And the overriding feature of that work is there's nothing unusual we need to bring to your attention regarding that work. The second risk we've included for completeness, fraudulent revenue recognition. Actually, it's a risk we tend to rebut for local authorities. And if I can give you an example here. Firstly, you don't have the same incentives that exist in the commercial world. You know, you're not a FTSE company looking to improve their share price or anything, so you might want to maximise your revenue or your profits to do that. So some of those direct incentives are not there. Officers don't have those incentives. They're not on performance-related pay. So clearly some of the incentives disappear. Also, your recognition of income's easy in the sense of you get grants from central government. It comes in. It's easy to recognise. It's really easy to audit as well because I've got something to tick to. Council tax, you know, there's no difficult recognition point. People either pay the council tax or they don't, and you have a bad debt provision for that. It's not as if you're a shipbuilder and you're building a ship that's going to take 5 years to build and it's going to cost 50 and you're going to get 50 million for it. At what point do you recognise that revenue? You don't have those difficult judgments, hence we can rebut that fraudulent revenue recognition risk. I then move on to page 6, 7 and 8, which focuses on the 3 specific significant risks that we identified for you. The first of those is valuation of property, plant and equipment. One of the biggest figures in your accounts is the value of your property, plant and equipment. As I mentioned earlier, small changes in assumptions and judgments used by your valuer can have significant swings on that. So we do some work. That work looks at whether we're happy with your valuer. You're happy with the qualifications they've got and whether they really are an expert. So we do some work around that. We then do some work around, okay, those valuations are only ever as good as the information they're based on. So if some of those are based on floor area and that floor area information's wrong, your valuation's going to be wrong. So we check some of the inputs into those on a sample basis. We also then look at what comes from the valuer and make sure they've been reflected in the accounts correctly. Again, something we've done here. Now, I have mentioned that there's some work outstanding, but there's nothing being flagged today that indicates a risk there or any issues in terms of requiring amendment to your accounts. The second risk area I flagged is pension liabilities. This is one where there's a lot more assumptions and judgments done. The pension fund, administered by North Yorkshire County Council, has an actuary. That actually will use lots of judgments and estimates based on experience, based on environment, what's happening, to determine the value of some of the liabilities in your pension scheme, for instance. So whether somebody lives till they're 75 or 77 will have an impact on the amount the pension fund has to pay and the liabilities. So that's one of the examples of one of those assumptions in there. So we will compare that to our actuary's range to make sure we're happy with that. Again, we do the usual procedures around making sure the actuary is an expert, like I said, with the planning, or with the valuer. We do the same procedures around looking at what information you provide to the actuary. Again, if you're providing payroll data which is incorrect, that will have an impact on the output that comes out, so we check all that. Again, the only issue we had was, in terms of this work, was the fact that you as an authority have made an upfront payment, because a lot of local authorities have some deficit payments to fund underlying deficits in their pension fund. the way that you had accounted for that didn't comply with the guidance. Am I surprised the local authorities made that mistake? No, because it's not a routine transaction. So we flagged that here in terms of the issue and again in the appendices. But if I can give the assurance that that error is just has no impact on the bottom line in the sense of having an impact on the resources available for the council, because it does get reversed out. The third risk is around faster close, and I've mentioned this a couple of times. You know, if you're closing the accounts quicker and faster, is there are you basing that information, or are you basing some of the information in the accounts on estimates? What impact does that have? What we've done is we actually looked at your close down plan, and we actually looked at the level of estimates in additional estimates you'd have to make, and on balance we determined whilst your close down plan is happening faster, there isn't significantly more estimates or judgments that would risk a material misstatement. So we almost declassified this as a significant risk in the end, having done some more detailed work. Pages 9 and 10 provide a little bit more detail around where we think you are in terms of the judgments and estimates that I was talking about earlier. Nothing really to flag to you there, all nicely within that acceptable range, and kind of you're getting a green traffic light. You know, you'll see some differences on the valuation of pensions, assets and liabilities, but you know, when you get two professionals in a room, they often will not agree. So you know, there's nothing there that leaves me uncomfortable in terms of signing off your audit opinion. The next slide, page 11, just brings together what I was saying earlier around the error that we identified. I don't propose to go into any more detail, just simply shows your accounts pre-audit and post-audit. We are now very much in the completion stage of the audit. Some of these areas I will pick up in more detail, but just to confirm, there's no other matters I need to report to you, and subject to the areas of work I mentioned earlier, we're in a position to issue a clean audit opinion. So basically we'd be saying we're happy your accounts give a true and fair view of your financial performance in the year and also the financial position at the year end. That takes us on to the value for money section. So the diagram on page 11, sorry it's rather busy, but basically We really wanted to put something in this report that explained to you what we mean by value for money, because value for money is quite a subjective term and can mean different things to different people. When we do it, we very much look at it from how the National Audit Office expects us to look at it. The National Audit Office has got a code which determines how we should test or provide this conclusion on value for money, and it's not focusing on how you spend every penny. And basically, if we had to do that, I'd be here a lot longer and your audit fee would be a lot higher as well. What we do is look at your underlying arrangements. So look at your arrangements in terms of how you make decisions. Do they incorporate risk? You know, so as an example, if I came to Rydale and I did that risk assessment and I never saw you talk about risks, never saw you consider your risk registers, I'd be kind of worried about how do you actually undertake risk management as a local authority? And that's really important when you're forming decisions. You know, what are the risks of the decision X and Y? Now, if that didn't happen, I would be flagging that as a significant risk and I'd do some more detailed work. And if I wasn't happy with that, I'd issue an accept for value for money conclusion, because I was not happy you had, would might be happy that you've got all your arrangements in place except for risk management. Now, I'm happy to say that at the audit plan stage, we did our risk assessment. We have identified no risk indicators. We've reassessed that during the course of the year. There's no further risk that we've identified. On the back of that detailed risk assessment, where we've looked to make sure you've got all your arrangements in place, we're happy to give a clean value for money conclusion. Basically means we're happy that in significant respects, you have got proper arrangements to ensure you take properly informed decisions, you deploy resources appropriately, and you achieve planned and sustainable outcomes for local people. The appendices picks up on some of the just some of the detail. Appendix 1 is some of the recommendations, well, all of the recommendations we've identified during the audit. You'll notice 4 green recommendations in the sense of priority three low risk recommendations. One, amber, looks more yellow, but priority two recommendation, just around the resources in terms of accounts production. You know, as I mentioned at the outset, you know, these accounts don't get simpler. You've got less time to do it and prepare them in. And actually, you know, in terms of there's less of officers to undertake those roles as well. And that's sometimes we felt that when we've been undertaking the audit in terms of responding to queries as well. Now, that doesn't take anything away from the efforts your officers have made. It's just something we felt we did need to flag for yourselves as because that's an important part of your overall control environment. I don't propose to go through the priority three recommendations because of the low-risk nature of them, but happy to take any questions later. We've also followed up prior recommendations and are happy that those have been implemented. Appendix 3 over on page 21 simply repeats the issue regarding the adjustment I mentioned earlier. Appendix 4 goes over the materialities, and Appendix 5 picks up on any required communication, which I'm not going to go through in detail because I've picked up everything I've needed to report to you as part of this presentation. And finally, our appendix on our independence. We're required to be independent, something we take very seriously, something we don't just do at the start or at the end. We consider that throughout the process. We've got systems within the firm to ensure, you know, we don't conflict ourselves by doing work that we shouldn't do. I'm happy to report, you know, the extent of our fee relationship with you is basically our audit services plus the housing benefits claim, which is typically done by the external auditor. I'm also happy to say there's no other issues that I need to raise to you, such as you could have relationships with individuals and there's nothing to report to you in that respect. And our fees are then confirmed, tucked away at the back in Appendix 7. I suppose that's a quick trot through our report. I'm more than happy to take questions on the whole document, but just in terms of summary, in terms of we're happy to give a clean audit opinion, clean VFM conclusion, subject to the completion of any final work. And I think at the end of this item, we'll be looking for some type of recommendation from this audit committee whether you approve the accounts or not, and that because on the basis of that they can be signed. But we'll also be looking for a delegation maybe to audit committee chair that if there's any outstanding, if there's any issues that I identified that do require a change in the accounts, that the audit committee that there's approval from the audit committee to have that delegated to the chair so we can meet your deadline on the 31st of July. More than happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Rashbaum. Before I come to questions round, I'd like to make a couple of comments. Your last two comments, I think, vaguely remember from last year, but I don't think I've got here in down in writing as to what the wording would be. I remember agreeing to being delegated to do last year, but I can't remember the wording of it, so we may need to put that together somehow. The second thing is you say in your report on page 18, resources in the accounts department, that there's been been recent staffing changes in the finance team that mean there's a limited resource in that team. I would agree personally totally with you, but I think that makes the comments that we've had from internal audit and from yourself particularly pertinent, that all the answers and information has been there when you have both wanted it and accurately. And I think that is means that we need to be thanking the finance team, but with particular reference to Mandy Birchall and to Anton Hodge, and for John Rain for standing in this evening to help. But I think that question that you've got there, and it ties into the annual governance statement and everything else, that we've gone through as a council are massive changes, but there are areas where those changes may, and I can think of at least two other departments, where those changes may have been overdone and need to be checked out in terms of the resources that we've got for the people we've got in them, so as to ensure that they can deliver the annual governance statement we've got here, the information for audit and so on and so forth. But most of all, thank you very much to the finance team for what they've done. Less of you, shorter time scale, etc. Thank you very much indeed. Right, I've said my bit on that. Questions to Rashbull? They usually take, you've gathered having sitting there, they usually take a little warming up to get round to questions. Jim?
I'm not sure that Rashbull's the right person to answer this, but just listening to the three accounts of our financial performance, we have quite a significant underspend. We have two audit operations saying that we're challenged for capacity. Do you get a feel that those two things are related?
Ashko?
It's probably not one for me to answer in that way. I mean, I suppose, my job's quite simple. I have two things to do, you know, in terms of what I said, in terms of my responsibilities. But I will flag that, you know, we have raised a recommendation around capacity. And, you know, there's a couple of things in there. There's capacity to do things within the council. So I know we focused on the accounts production team, but I've often seen where you maybe take capacity out of a local authority, it stops them running projects, running initiatives, which then could have a similar impact on the budget. That's just my observation, what I've seen. I also, in terms of recommendation, you know, if you were to have a new system implementation on something, you know, would that overstretch that accounts team? You know, if you had a new fixed asset register, a new payroll system, or something, you know, so that, and that's another reason we make that observation.
I think there are, Jim, and I'm not going to expand tonight, but at least two areas in this annual governance statement here where we are stretched because of a shortage of resources. Now, how big that shortage of resource is, we don't know, but it's hopefully all part of what's going to be looked into in terms of the underspend and what is needed to deliver what we've got in the paperwork here. So your question and my comment, I think, are pretty closely related to each other, but we won't know the answer until the finance people have looked into it further, I would have thought, and senior management.
I think it's not for here and now, but my experience of cuts is that it does have an impact on delivering your projects and proposals.
Yes, exactly.
You need to just have a look at that in more detail to understand if there's a relationship that needs to be addressed.
Any further questions? Will? Thanks.
Sorry, an observation one. I understand the amber line on the resources for the accounts team. I'm also interested in the amber line on the response to the peer review, in that having read what's there, I'm not absolutely sure what it tells me.
Okay, thank you. In terms of, I mean, the peer review point is one, is a recommendation we raised in the prior year, and you know that assessment we made last year in terms of where we rated that risk. From my perspective, you know, you had a peer review undertaken. You spent money and resources on that peer review, and there was a concern last year that progress wasn't being made to address that. Yeah. Now, you know, hence have we raised that as a recommendation. We've then, you know, followed that up this year, and there has been more progress on that. And I suppose from our perspective, there's nothing there. And we considered the peer review as part of our VFM conclusion last year. And whilst it didn't result in any adverse impact on our value for money conclusion, but we did raise a comment that you should actually be taking that forward. So this year we've just simply revisited that in the sense of, has it been taken forward? We've not done any further review of that. We don't need to either.
Thank you. Just interesting to get a different perspective on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. Anybody else? I know it's serious, but have we got a wording for this? Have you got a wording? A wording arrives. I'll read it out aloud and then we'll consider it. Delegate authority to the chair of the audit committee for any further adjustments needed to be made to the statement of accounts. Does that cover what you're wanting, Rashbull?
That sounds very familiar to what I've heard of other local authorities, in the sense of kind of it would cover you to approve the accounts.
Approve
the accounts with further adjustments that have been identified.
Do we approve the accounts, or is that policy and resources that we approve the account? I don't know.
It's policy and resources. It's the recommendation from either this committee or delegated authority. And when is policy and resources?
Tomorrow night. I don't want to miss something that we need to do tonight, because putting another meeting together.
That's me. I go to a number of audit committees. Some have approval to sign up the accounts. Some don't.
I have a feeling by looking at the accounts in there that it is Claire Slater and the chair of PNR that does said. I mean, we can word this that if any further authority is needed by the chair of the audit committee, then the committee authorises them to do it, and then we're covered. Would that cover it? But I'd like to put an if in there, because I don't really want to assume control of the council without, a bloodless coup. So, if required. The audit committee delegates authority to the chair of the audit committee for any further adjustment needed to be made to the statement of accounts. Are we happy with that, or do we want to bin it? I don't mind. I just do not want to, in any circumstances, call everybody back together again for another meeting because we haven't done something.
No, I'm quite happy with
that. Yes, Jim?
I mean, this committee makes its recommendation to PNR to approve them, doesn't it?
I think so, but I've just...
And so we would delegate to you if such further...
If there's any changes needed, yeah, okay.
Recommendation.
Right.
That would seem to be sensible.
So I'll put the if required in, so if we shouldn't be doing it, it's covered. I think we shouldn't be doing it, but I really do not want... None of you are going to thank me if I call you all back for another meeting. In a week's time, or it'd be less than a week's time, one of the accounts got to be all in, dusted and agreed. No, you're not going to like that one, are you? So if required, the audit committee delegates authority to the chair of the audit committee. Any further adjustments need to be made into the statement of accounts. I'll move that. Reluctantly, because I don't think we need it, but I will move it.
I'll second.
Thank you, Jeff. Those in favour? Yeah. And that's unanimous as well. Thank you. I think that might have been an additional... hair for us to follow, but I'm you've made me nervous, so we've done it. Right. Where do we cover the annual governance statement? Because we've approved the accounts. Is there anything that we have to do in relation to the annual governance statement? Yes, I think we do. I think we do, but again, I'm
John's got a comment to make. John Ryan.
John?
Yeah, I believe the annual governance statement, of course, is part of the statement of accounts, so the approval for the annual governance statement is incorporated as part of that.
In part of the statement of the accounts?
Yes. It's one document.
So we need to, as such, approve the statement of accounts.
Including.
Approve the statement of accounts, including the annual governance statement.
Not approve. It's recommendation for approval.
Recommend, yeah. Which recommend the statement of accounts, including the annual governance statement. Now, I think before we do that, as anybody will.
If I just can just clarify, are they one document, John, or are they two parts of? So they have to come together.
Yes.
Fine.
Yes, I think they are. Will.
Just so I understand.
Yeah. So, on the annual governance statement, has anybody got any comments and thoughts? Because we've covered the accounts as such.
Is the annual government statement identical to last year's?
No.
Very different.
The annual governance statement, Ed, kicks off on page 155, I think. Yes. And goes through the general things as to how it works, followed by specific recommendations for this year. And the ones that were brought forward, the first two are brought forward, first three brought forward from last year. And we've still got in there, picking up Will's point, that it's our somebody's responsibility on the peer review, which I think, Will, is the Resources Working Party. Are you on the Resources Working Party?
Not anymore, Chairman.
But were you last year?
I was last year, yes.
So you will know more than the rest of us then, because I've been to the one for this year. The Resources Working Party was the same group who've been looking into the peer review.
Indeed.
So do we know what is happening with that? This isn't a test.
My personal understanding is that there are a couple of outstanding actions for that group to take. Maybe that's something we need to revisit.
Yeah, and is that a subcommittee of policy and resources?
Yes.
And so it will then go to policy and resources and then presumably full council?
Yes.
When we'll all disagree with it and we'll all have to start all over again with it?
Probably.
Yes. Yes. Is there anything on the annual governance statement that anybody wants to query and or raise? And we have gone from their payroll and City of York and so on and so forth, which we're all delighted to see the back of having got that organised. Is there anything else? No, I don't think so. For anybody? No? So, we need to move a recommendation, the approval of the accounts, including the annual governance statement. Fine. I move that. We got a second? Thanks, Jim. I missed that. What, to second it? Oh, commendable. That gives me the impression of being unanimous as well. Good.
It wasn't Chair, it was four votes for and one abstention.
Ah, one abstention. Who's the abstention? Ah. I think that is a level of honesty that is commendable, and if you had a truth drug round the room, you'd probably have other people veering in your direction rapidly. But this isn't a criticism of you at all. In fact, it's a compliment, I hope, in your direction. I'm on the council's members' training group, the member development group, that looks at what we need to get in on the Wednesday members' briefings sessions, which happens sort of once every month, 6 weeks, whatever. Is there anything we should be doing in relation to audit, accounts and or annual governance statements? Because I think your comment is where I have been sat for years. And you don't have a lot of choice when you're sat in here proposing it to then say, I don't understand it, I'm going to abstain. But I think you've got the honesty to say that. Is it an area we ought to be pushing for? Because if you do ask for training on audit, I can't imagine it being a massive string of people turning up, but I think we all do. And is anybody, in open discussion, is anybody, can we just sort of stop the meeting but just have a quick discussion? Max, is there anything we should be doing in this area?
Well, for other audit committees, we have run training on things like what does the annual governance statement represent, how is it prepared. We've also done provided training on, you know, the role of external and internal audits. So we've done sessions like that, usually sort of half an hour, so it's not too heavy. But we could certainly do that if there was interest.
I personally would think that would be brilliant. I don't know what other thoughts. Ed, as you've raised the subject without meaning to raise it. Would that be useful?
Yes. I think we've had similar meetings in the past. I find these boxes of things going down. I don't find it very easy to understand the context of the world.
If I was being cynical, I could say that might be the reason why it's done like that, but I couldn't possibly say that. I think so. Last year, the session we had that was best attended of those members' things was the one on scrutiny. And I was actually expecting it to be, you know, oh dear me, there's three of us turned up and whatever, and it had the biggest turnout of any of the training sessions in the year. So do we ask you, Max, would you consider doing that for us?
Yes.
That would be brilliant.
Pick
Sorry?
We can pick a suitable time.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know. You've made a note. It'll happen if you've made a note. That's it. Brilliant. That's our hand.
I completely agree. And if Max has done that before, then I think the key, and I'm worrying we're not really sort of in meeting now, is that?
No, I said, the key
to me is the sell to members that says, this is what it is, this is what it's going to take. Expect to get what we're telling you're going to get, and don't expect to get any more. And I don't mean that in a derogatory sense at all. I mean, I think the important thing to get a good attendance, it needs a good attendance, is to be very clear about what it is that we're actually going to do.
We've got quite a different membership on the audit committee to last year, and it perhaps would be a good time to refresh ourselves.
Yeah. The only problem, and I don't want to depress anybody, but the only problem is between this time now and doing this next time next year, we all have a sort of job application to go through with the public in May, and then when they've had their sense, then whatever lands in the council then has its mix up again, and people get, no, I'm sorry, you're now onto that committee, and you're now onto that committee. So I think we need to, I think there's a case for doing it now, because we do it now when people are here and get it nailed. Well, yes, there are audit things go on happening, yes.
So maybe
and the annual governance statement should be a continuing document through the year, not something that we just do at this meeting. So, no, I'm thinking out aloud. I think there's a case for getting on with it and doing it and whatever. Sorry, I missed that.
They don't guarantee that you'll know everything when it's done.
Well, how did you, that's not your positive, normal positive approach.
Well, they're complex matters, Chair, and requirements and assessments and government's expectations of these changes as well. So, some of these that's highly implied. We accept some special duties and tell us what they think about accounts. We're going to do it all ourselves.
Can I, and I did move thank the finance department, can I thank Rashpal particularly because of the time scale of this external auditor being shortened? And when I hadn't got that today, I was steaming, right? And I came in steaming, and then I calmed down and I thought about it, and I thought, well, hang on, everything's been in time scale, been all over the place. And the first word you said, the absolute first word is, I apologise. And I went, phew, shut up, John. And then you explained the timescale of it, and absolutely brilliant. And that, to me, is working with. If something hasn't gone right, and somebody's first words is, I apologise, then I don't care how wrong it went. We then work together to try and move it on. So thank you ever so much for that apology. It's much appreciated.
Thank you, Chair. If I can just say, it's something you're going to face in the sector more and more because of the shorter timescales.
Yeah.
I work in other sectors which, you know, NHS has an even quicker timetable.
What?
And, you know, and again, that ends up being routine, that you're not going to get your 1 week ideal review time beforehand. But thank you for the words.
And if I were being cynical, which I suggested that Jim and I are not, I would say, how on earth can you seriously consider a document of that size, of just that size, if you don't get it at least a week before? Because everybody, in particularly local government, its councillors are not sitting there waiting for something to arrive. They fit it into their week. But no, thank you ever so much. Much appreciated. Yeah. Can I, while we're doing the thanks and whatever, is this your last occasion as an external auditor?
Well, not generally, but
no.
Unless
no,
you're telling me something I don't know.
I didn't mean to have a whip round for your retirement.
You can do that if you want to.
But I did once work for an organisation where someone wasn't liked, and we did collect for his leaving present. But he was more than miffed when he found out what we'd done. Is this the end of your company's?
It is. Yes. So this is our last. This is the last output from us in a sense. We do have the annual audit letter to produce, and we've still got the housing benefit grant to audit. But in terms of formal documentation, this is the...
To the audit committee, this is it. Well, can I thank you for your support and work with us over the previous years?
Thank you, Chair. I think each year I put on thank you my record to on record. My thanks to the finance team and generally officers, and it's stated in the report. But again, just to echo that throughout the 3-year period.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure working with you. Thank you. Thank you. The usual rules apply if you wish to. The lure of something better than overview and scrutiny is eventually won. The same applies to you, Rashbell. If you'd like to wander, that's more than acceptable. It seems strange to thank people very much for being here and how much you appreciate it, and as soon as you give them the chance to go, they're gone. Thank you much. Thanks, Max. That would be most useful. I'll leave you with the other thing. And Rashbell, I'm sure we'll meet in some other circuit of life if you're still auditing for others. And that applies to the rest of our... Well, they're going anyway, aren't they? That's the only trouble with the relaxed style. You sometimes get too relaxed with it. It just goes relaxed on you. I prefer it because it means people like Ed are prepared to say, I don't understand it. Thank you, John. Thank you, Mandy. Mandy, just carry on, but faster. Yeah. Well, we're still in session, but it's become incredibly relaxed, yeah. I don't know, and the trouble with Pete not being here and John having gone, John wouldn't know the answer anyway. No, and he wouldn't know anyway because he hasn't been here. And I have the view that because of all the change and because everything's all piled into this one point and Pete's left at the same time as we're working with the county... Well, we're still on tape and in the scrutiny meeting, so yes. Yeah, I think there may be, because we go here, and this depends on what happens, and I will discuss with Anton when he comes back from his holidays, but the accounts that we've got here, everything else that we get is led into with an officer's report. And if we'd had a report here saying, we note the report, then we would have known that that is what we should have been doing, noting the report. And I was absolutely fine, that's what I was going to do, and we were going to just note the report and receive the accounts and whatever, and wave at them as they went past, until Rashbell said, we need to delegate authority to the chair. Now, I didn't really fancy saying to him, no, I don't think you should, because if we did need to do that, then we would have been in an awful knot. I don't think we do need to do that, but we might have done. And exactly the same thing, I think there should be a finance introduction to the accounts. Anybody else think that?
Yeah, I mean, the point is what Ed's saying is that in presenting the underspend, for instance, you would expect to know where that was.
Well, I think is that the account take is presenting the accounts in one form or another to a set of working.
Yes.
And therefore, is it reasonable for those lay people to understand
This is the area sort of thing I've been alluding to all evening. I'm quite happy to say I intend to sit down with Anton, the 151 officer, Pete Johnson's replacement, when he comes back and look at it as to where we should be going with. What I didn't do this time, quite deliberately, when they had a 2 months shorter to do things in this time, and Pete Johnson going, I didn't think it was fair on anybody to start... That wasn't the time to start looking at how we should be doing it. No, and you haven't now as well on the same logic. And I think, yes, I will sit down with Anton and we will look at what has happened here. I will take on this because Becky will tie a knot in my neck to remind me that we need to look at reports to go with it and so on and so forth. And the training idea that came up from earlier. And I think, you know, it's a time for change and a time for move forward. And you're absolutely right. Because I've sat in the early ones and they're particularly sitting in the back there thinking, well, I don't understand.
Is that the production of the accounts? You'll find that information anyway. So it's a question.
Yes.
Highlighting those headings.
Yes.
Handing them on to members so they understand the issue better.
Right. Yeah, it does. Right. Well, that's probably the longest item on the agenda we've had for a long time in time terms. Scrutiny Reviews Task Group. We failed, or I failed, at the last scrutiny meeting to set up a task group to look into the governance with North Yorkshire. We agreed we're going to do it, and Becky's put together a scoping review of that, but we need to have a meeting in a couple of weeks' time with whoever it is that's going to be on that task group to start looking at how we proceed and how we move forward on the governance in relation to, and this is a perfect example tonight, you know, and it's going to take a little while, but how does North Yorkshire and us work together in finance guidance from North Yorkshire's people and ours, and how do we deliver? How do we deliver in HR terms what is needed? How do we deliver, etc.? And scrutiny has taken on that role, but we need a group of people that are prepared to look into it and decide how we move forward with it. Have I any volunteers? This is the usual problem. Well, we could, of course, go Janet and David.
So, Chair, are you suggesting that we would propose how to proceed, or that we would scrutinise how others are intending?
I think it's both, the answer to that. I think there's an element of what we do. I mean, my own...
Get rid of P&L altogether.
Sorry?
We could just get rid of P&L altogether and do the job.
Yes. Yes, we could, but P&R is not doing it, so yes, and P&R didn't do it.
Can I just say something?
Yeah, please do.
Just for the benefit of members who haven't been part of the scrutiny task groups before, I know some have, we normally set up meetings to discuss how we're going to proceed with a review, which then comes back to the committee for formal approval.
That was suggesting that
we set up a task group meeting, yeah. And normally we would invite all members to those
task groups. But well, I must be sure that I've got two or three that are going to come, because if you invite everybody and nobody comes, or the chair comes on their own and it isn't therefore a meeting, not very clever. So I'm asking for some help from some, but, you know, tell it to you. We're looking at, and it's only looking at this stage, because how we commit ourselves long term, the governance of working with North Yorkshire.
Just say it in the minutes. 35 of the minutes.
It's all right. And we need to know how we're going to work with North Yorkshire for appointing a chief executive. Whoops, we've done that. Right? But we were doing it on the hoof as we went along. And that's what sort of lit up a light with one or two of us that we needed to have a rule book as to how we worked with North Yorkshire. We need to know it for finance, legal, and HR. I think those are the four, are they not? Yeah. And it's just a question of looking at it and then asking the officer to get us in. And my first glances are North Yorkshire's working with Selby. How's that work from Selby's angle? How's it work from North Yorkshire's angle?
Yeah,
that could be well part chunk of. What is the overriding position? Would Richmond and Hamilton talk to us about how they're working together? Didn't. They worked together and it blew up. Now, in other words, we might be able to get somebody there to talk to us as to what not to do. Because if you do it this way, it might blow up. No idea. But that's sort of a couple of possibilities. Thank you. Thank you. Have I another volunteer?
I better keep you in order, don't I?
Yes, please, Jeff. I mean, you keeping me in order is a pleasure.
In the past, what we've done is there might be two or three people on the committee, but other people, but lots of the time, the meetings have been held alongside the audit or scrutiny committee, and a lot of people just spend all the time.
Yeah.
So if just because you're not on the committee, you wouldn't need to say,
And that is what I've done for the last year. And all our working parties we've had, everybody's been invited to all of them. But all I'm saying is you've got a couple of people who are saying they will endeavour to come. Then you have a likelihood of, if you do have a meeting an hour before, of not turning up, looking around, going, where's everybody else? Right, so can I propose that working party is the Chair, Ed Jowett, and Jeff Aikam, plus whoever wishes to turn up to any of the meetings. Well, they would, yeah, exactly. That will happen automatically. Those in favour? Oh, is it seconded? Are you seconded? Oh, Jeff seconded it. Bear with me. Now I have to really peer to see if that guy Jowett has voted for this or not this time. Can't do that twice. Mind you, you want to do the Snowy Windrush one when the whole of council, all 26 of us or whatever, all voted, agreed all the way round, abstain. Last vote of the thing, brilliant. Right. Any other business that the...
I'm going to set a date, John.
Oh, yes, date. Well spotted. Do you want me to ring between you two as to when, or do you want to...
Put a date forward.
Right. What's happening a fortnight tonight? Well, if that's a fortnight tonight, yes. If we're not, it's not in August. Pardon? Well, yeah, I mean, they're not going on another holiday, are you?
Not till the end.
Not till the end. That's one of the joys. That's one of the joys of a working party, is you can steer it round people easily.
Week commencing the 6th of August.
Yep. That's not next week, the week. The week after. What's the Thursday looking like?
Nine.
Or would daytime? Would daytime suit? No, let's not leave it. Let's leave it at evenings to kick off with, so that other people can make. Should we go for that Thursday evening, which would be the 9th? Yeah, 6:30. No, exactly, that's what I'm saying. And in fact, I'll try and ring round and chat to people, and if we can get others, and I might twiddle it to 7 o'clock if you are all happy with that. I won't move it any later than that. But there's people like Di who just said, no, I can't, my train doesn't get me back in time for that. Right. Anything more on that? Have I missed anything?
No.
Fine. Good. Any other business that the chair decides is urgent? Well, I had decided that there wasn't anything urgent, but I've now decided there is something urgent, as I said earlier on, I might do. And it is urgent that we collectively thank Fiona for her work on this committee over as long as I've been on here, and presumably longer than that for others. It's been a pleasure working with you. Absolutely brilliant. And it is urgent for those who are checking up on what is urgent and not urgent, because if we don't do it tonight, this is Fiona's last meeting of overview and scrutiny. So thank you ever so much. It's been a pleasure working with you. It's very useful to have a lawyer that knows what they're doing and keeps you on track. And on a personal level, I apologise for being awkward and difficult and all the other things that I do in spades, and you've managed to keep a good humour and say, no, but. And that has been very, very useful. Thank you ever so much.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank
you. Yes, it has been a pleasure. It has been a pleasure working with Fiona, and it's on the tape if you want it. I don't recall saying that. No, I can't. You didn't hear me say that, did you?
No.
Right. So, I think that's everything. Meeting closed.